I think most people would perceive me as more orderly and rule-oriented than creative, which I sometimes think of myself as that as well. And I'm sure that's how I come across.
Yeah.
I think I know there is a creative side to me. And I think it's actually something that I've been discovering slowly only in the last few years.
Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast, brought to you by Career Pivot. This podcast is where those of us in the second half of life come together to discuss how to repurpose our careers for the 21st century. Come listen to career experts give you proven strategies. Listen to people like you tell their stories on how they repurpose their careers. And finally, get your questions answered. Your host, Mark Miller, has made six career pivots over the last 30 years. He understands this is not about jumping out of the frying pan into a fire, but rather to create a plan where you make clear, actionable steps or pivots to a better future career. Are you ready to repurpose your career?
Welcome to episode 97 of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. My name is Mark Miller, and I'll be your host every Monday for a discussion on what it's like to repurpose your career. If you're enjoying this podcast, please share it with other like-minded souls. Subscribe on careerpivot.com or iTunes or any of the other apps that supply podcasts. This includes the new one, Google Podcast, Podbeam, Overcast, TuneIn, Spotify, and Stitcher. Share it on social media or just tell your neighbors and colleagues. The more people you share it with, the more people we can help. We are rapidly approaching episode 100. I'm thinking of producing a special episode, but I'm not sure what. Sound familiar? I'm kind of stuck on what would be special. If you have any ideas or can help me get unstuck, email me at podcast@careerpivot.com. Last week in episode 96, I discussed how we have pulled the plug and have moved to Mexico. This week and next, we will be returning to the Can Sarah Repurpose Her Career series. This is the third in the series. And if you have not listened to episode 93 and 94, stop. I suggest you go back and listen to it now. You will find all the reports for this episode at careerpivot.com/Sarah. I spell Sarah S-A-R-A, but everybody else on the team spells it S-A-R-A-H. Don't worry, both spellings will work. Just go to careerpivot.com/Sarah and spell it however you want. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome back, Sarah. We were just talking about the fact that you're very creative, but you're very orderly. And that's kind of a odd combination, because I find usually creative people, your insistence score, your need score goes around being creative. In other words, you like doing it your way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got some real interesting, in many ways, you look like a creative, and you have some little things like being a closet introvert and the fact that you really do like rules.
I do. I think most people would perceive me as more orderly and rule-oriented than creative.
Yes.
Which I sometimes think of myself as that as well. And I'm sure that's how I come across.
Yeah.
I think I know there is a creative side to me. And I think it's actually something that I've been discovering slowly only in the last few years.
Well, one of the things my one intern, Elizabeth, you can go back and listen to her on episode 20. One of the things I had her do was just randomly start taking art classes and jewelry classes. Mm-hmm. And I told her to do it randomly. And this has to do with chaos theory. If you just kind of throw something against the wall, you're more likely to try something that you wouldn't have thought of.
Right.
And she's very highly creative and also very orderly. She had done air and water permitting for 20 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that you may consider doing.
Mm-hmm.
Is just because the more you are creative, whether it's at work or not,
right,
you're going to feel better.
Well, I think what I'm learning is that I have to indulge in my creativity. And that's up to me to do.
Yes.
And it's very, you know, when we spoke last, you said you recommended take more reading breaks.
Yep.
You like to read, and that's true. I love to read. And I think just as importantly, I need to find more creative breaks for myself.
Yep. It may be, you know, I had one client who liked to knit.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, go take, bring your knitting into work and take, you know, 15-minute knitting breaks.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it did for her was it turned the brain off.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It was very relaxing.
Right.
So particularly I find with creatives who've gone into the business environment,
mm-hmm.
what very often is you take that and you shove it.
Absolutely.
You bottle it up. In fact, you probably put it in a little box and you put it underneath the bed and you probably forget about it.
It's very true.
And what I'm going to encourage you to do is take that out and, number one, see where you can insert that into your life, and then see how you can insert that into your job.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so what I want you to do, I sent you multiple documents, and so I want you to bring up the PWS document, one with all the bars, the work styles document. What you see on the bars on the left-hand side is the top three are your natural management styles. The next three, work motivation, self-development, corporate adaptability, is how you fit in the corporate environment.
Mm-hmm.
And you're very adaptable to the corporate world.
Mm-hmm.
The last two are how you fit in society.
Mm-hmm.
And again, those last two groupings, you don't look like a creator. And we'll discuss why.
Okay.
The bars on the right side are how you make decisions. Notice the bars are in pairs, and they all add up to 11.
Right.
So we're going to see you're a linear concrete thinker.
Right.
Which, again, for someone who is so high artistic, literary, and musical, is really unusual.
Yeah, that's what I'm learning.
I am a big-time linear concrete thinker, and I am a recovery engineer.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
By the way, this is probably your superpower.
Okay.
I've had this,
to my advantage.
Yes. The fact is, you are probably a very fact-based decision maker and process-oriented, yet you're creative.
Right.
That is unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with a client who super high artistic and musical. She behaved more like a man. She was very direct, very social, very low emotional. Boy, she was creative off the wazoo.
Mm-hmm.
And where her superpower was her ability to get people in a room and mm-hmm. get people to make decisions
mm-hmm.
quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that creativity in with all the people person stuff. I like to say she knew how to get stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the, I'm planting a few seeds in your brain here.
Right.
People who are hyper creative, but also system oriented.
Mm-hmm.
You may also want to, I'll have to go back and look, but it's Camille Knight. Camille, I labeled her my logical creative. She grew up dancing, singing, and was in the math fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
And what she does now in her 50s, she now builds Tableau dashboards.
Oh.
She builds really good-looking, attractive dashboards.
Yeah.
And she's a data analyst. She's mm-hmm. a business analyst.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time in her life she gets to marry both sides of the brain.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah, okay. That must be very satisfying.
So that's where you're kind of like that?
Mm-hmm.
Does that resonate?
It does. Yes, it does.
So we're gonna do these first three on this page, on this document. Then we're going to move to the other document I sent you. So the knowledge specialist, directive management, delegative management is your natural management style. Do you manage people?
I do.
How do you like managing people?
I like a very collaborative relationship.
Yes.
As the initial report shows, and as we briefly discussed last time, I do like asking versus telling or directing. That's not to say that when I don't ask for everything that needs to be done, but I do very much value my employees' buy-in, and I want them to understand why I need them to do something or why I'm asking them to do something. And I want a lot of reciprocity in the relationship. If there's something that they're not happy with about, I want to know that, because I want to try to, I want to help them solve problems, and I want to be approachable, and I know stuff has to get done, and I know what needs to get done, and I trust that they will help get things done. And if they don't, then they're not the right people for the team.
Okay.
And I've had to deal with that too.
Well, you have a very interesting management set of bars. So the first one is knowledge specialist, and you're a 4 out of 10. Go ahead and read that little knowledge specialist paragraph there for me.
Contributes and leads by utilizing personal expertise and knowledge to find solutions. Leads by example. This includes managers and executives who are leaders in technical, educational, consulting, and other specialized fields.
Now, the vast majority of the people I do this with are much higher knowledge specialists, because most of them are individual contributors, and they're paid for what they know.
Mm-hmm.
I get the impression you're not an expert in what you do. Is that true?
No, I would say I'm an expert in what I do.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you... do you use your expertise to manage, or do you tend to lead people and let them figure it out?
It's a combination. It depends on the team member.
Okay.
You know, it depends on the team member. I have a couple of different areas on my team.
Okay.
And so for those, for a particular area that I'm thinking about, I certainly am not the knowledge specialist.
Yeah.
So I have to leave it to that team member with some guidance to do what she thinks is best.
So let's go through all three of these, and I've got an idea for you.
Okay.
Directive management, you're a 5 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and read that.
Personal direct involvement in problem solving, controlling, and implementing. Leads from the front in exercising authority. Includes managers and executives in action-driven organizations.
What this means is lead from the front, or I like to say lead by telling. Most of the folks I've had who've been high directive management have been in IT.
Mm-hmm.
I had a guy who ran a print shop. I had other guys who, the guy ran a brick plant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you go set this up, you go set this up. And it's very much by directive.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
That is not that is not how I see my role at all.
Okay. And then delegative management, you're a 4 out of 10. Go ahead and read that.
Utilizes plans and strategies, arranges resources, and assists coworkers and teams in dealing with resources and implementation issues. Includes managers and executives in plan-driven organizations.
Have you ever aspired to be the VP of whatever you're doing?
Heck no.
Okay. Delegative management is when you move up the ranks.
Right.
Right. I find most of the people I deal with like get their hands dirty. And people who tend to be high delegative management are very, very comfortable getting their hands all
over. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know people. I work with people like that, and they are higher up in the organization. And that's, you know, a good quality to have at that level.
Yes.
I am, number one, my role doesn't call for that currently.
Yeah.
And number two, I don't aspire to get to that point.
Well, one of the things, you're the first person I've had where literally you've had equal values on each one of these. And what I suspect is you're very adaptable in your management style.
Mm-hmm.
What you were just telling me is, well, you want me to do this with this person and that with that person, that you're comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so.
And that's one of the things I'm, one of the things I want you to think about because that may be a selling point for yourself.
Right.
Okay.
Understood.
So let's go over to the other document, which is your preferred work styles. And there's a page called corporate styles. It looks like this. So the first one is work motivation, and you're an 8 out of 10. Go ahead and read that for me, and I will translate for you.
Describes your attitude towards work. What motivates you to work? People who score high, 7 or above, seem to enjoy work for its own sake and have a tendency to work well for others, exhibiting responsible attitudes toward work rules and assigned functions. People with lower scores need to have an interest or a buy-in in their work in order to get motivated. They need to see the value in the work being assigned to them. It is important to note that good managers score low as well as high on work motivation.
A 10, if I came in and I say, Sarah, I need you to do this, the first response would be, yes! Think dog. If you were a 1, and I've had a bunch of 1s, if I said, Sarah, I need you to do this, the first question out of their mouth, the first word out of their mouth would be, why?
Mm-hmm.
Think cat.
Yeah, yeah.
You're more of a dog than a cat,
mm-hmm.
which
yeah.
means you're probably pretty cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
If someone walks in and you generally agree with what they're doing, you're going to be a very good soldier.
Yes, I agree with that.
This goes along with having this very you want this very cooperative team.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
I can tell you from reading this, the most important thing probably at work is the team around you.
Yes, very much.
Right?
Yeah, when they're happy, I'm happy.
Yes. That is, now out of curiosity, your current team, did you hire them?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever had to inherit a team?
Yes.
And how'd that go?
Fair.
Okay.
It wasn't as much fun, nor was it as smooth.
Yes. Well, if you're going to be managing a team, you will always have to make sure that either you get to build the team or mm-hmm. you understand the team ahead of time.
Right.
Because it's that important to you.
Right, right. Well, what
I'm
I learned
this little seed here.
Yeah, yeah. What I learned is that discovering the discovery of team members. Every team member has something unique to offer, and it just takes a little work and time to get at what they have to offer. I have the patience for that,
okay.
And I like discovering other people, so I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. So we're going to skip down to corporate adaptability. We'll go back to self-development in a second. So you are a 10 out of 10 on corporate adaptability. So go ahead and read that little paragraph for me.
Refers to how a person responds to and level of commitment to the organization. Someone with a high score, 7 or above, understands and is prepared to participate in corporate politics. This person is able to identify with the organization as an entity. Someone with a low score, 3 or lower, does not like or choose to participate in the politics of an organization. This person will identify with the people or an individual within the organization rather than with the organization itself. For example, I work for Joe, not I work for IBM.
Okay. You proud to work for the company that you're with?
Yes, very much.
Okay. Someone with a high work motivation, it's very important that the corporate mission aligns with what your own values.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll use example because I'm like a 9 or a 10 on corporate adaptability. One of my FUBAs, one of my career mistakes, was I went to work for IBM Global Services, and my one gig as a consultant was for Easy Corp, pawn shops, short-term
mm-hmm.
loans.
Mm-hmm.
After I'd been in there 6 months, it made me want to puke.
Mm-hmm.
Loaning money to the poor at 20% a month was mm-hmm. abhorrent to me. I couldn't do it. Now, my job had nothing to do with it. My job was building a point-of-sale solution.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you worked for your current company?
9.5 years.
Okay. Before that, were you proud to work for that company?
I was. I don't think I felt as committed to it.
Okay. My guess is you're a bit mission-driven?
Yes, I am.
Okay. By the way, that's also very common of creatives. They, mm-hmm. tend to be...
Why is that?
Because they're emotional. They tend to believe in a cause. And that mm-hmm. tends to go along with people who tend to be very creative.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right, right.
I've done enough of these, and I see, and being a recovery engineer, I see patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you, your insistence score is where you deviate from the norm.
Interesting. Okay.
Right? Being very organized for a creative is real unusual.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the other piece is playing the corporate politics.
Mm-hmm.
You play it?
To some extent, I do. When I have to, yeah, when I have to. Sometimes I don't mind the game of corporate politics.
Okay.
I know that a lot of people have an aversion to it. I don't mind it. I accept it as a fact of life in corporate America. I don't like it when it smacks of unethical or lacks integrity or starts to feel shady or just plain wrong in some way.
Yeah. And that doesn't surprise me. Again, that goes with your mission driven.
Mm-hmm.
Having a cause, having the company's work of being for the greater good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does that resonate?
Yes, it is resonating.
Okay. So let's step back up to self-development, and you are a 9 out of 10, and go read that. Now I'm going to put a different spin on it.
Measures how much you prefer to learn, advance, and develop. A score of 7 or above shows a strong desire to learn skills in classroom settings. A score of 3 or lower suggests the person will learn new skills best through practical hands-on experience.
Okay. I don't like the word classroom settings.
Yeah, no, because I don't even agree with that.
Okay. It's I like to say you like to have some structure given to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes, agree.
So people who tend to be high in this, if they're going to take a new job, whether it's a new skill set or it's a new industry, the first thing out of your mouth should be, what's your onboarding process?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
You will want some kind of structure. The higher your score, the more structure. I'm not going to tell you what that structure is, because mm-hmm. the way this was written for classical education, which we have, which is no longer,
mm-hmm.
but we tend to have now, there are all kinds of ways to learn. You just want some structure to it. So I'll right. use the example. I have a good friend who was in the PR business. She got out. She went down to one of the local universities, taught for a bunch of years, and then wanted back into corporate. And she was going to go into PR sales.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a 10. And the first thing I said is, you've never sold before. They have to put you through a sales training program.
Mm-hmm.
The company who hired her, PR Newswire, actually did that.
Mm-hmm.
They taught everyone coming in how they wanted people to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, ding, good fit. But I had her very specifically looking for that.
Right.
So if you walked into a new industry or you're going to walk into a new area, the first thing out of your mouth is, what's the onboarding process?
Right.
If they don't,
if they don't have one, yeah,
probably not.
Yeah, I am always looking for some structure.
Yep.
And I provide it for myself as well.
Yes.
Like it is something that I seek out. It is a need of mine for sure.
Well, as we said, you like order,
yeah.
particularly when it's yours.
Yeah. Yeah. It's how I've learned to cope.
Yes. Good. So again, for a creative, you're a good corporate citizen. That is real unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's the next one. Social adaptability, you're an 8 out of 10. Let's go down to the social styles.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and read that for yourself.
describes your basic opinions concerning other people in general. A high-scoring individual is generally trusting of other people as well as being open to new ideas. A low-scoring individual generally feels that trust must be earned. The low-scoring person is more cautious in trusting others. Yeah, I trust, I give people the benefit of the doubt and trust them. And if they give me reason to not trust them, I'm not naive. I won't trust them.
Right.
But they got to give me reason.
Yes.
Everyone starts off with my basic level of trust.
Yeah. Now, high trust, low trust is not good or bad. I could use the example, a police officer, you want very low trust.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with low trust people, when they walk into a brand new situation, it's stressful. High trust people, when they walk in a new situation, tend to get burned. So I'm presuming you've been burned a time or two.
Oh yes, for without a doubt, personally and professionally. I've learned early on when not to trust.
Yeah, one of the things I always tell people, in either case, is find a method, particularly if you're walking into a new situation, find a method to allow people to earn your trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just sometimes being observant of, okay, I asked them to do this. Did they do it?
Mm-hmm.
Did they follow through on their commitments?
Right.
Right. Are they trustworthy?
Right. Right.
If you do that, number one, you'll keep yourself from being burned. But for the low trust people, putting a structure in place. And that's something you may want to consider. Right. So the next one. Social responsibility. You're a 9 out of 10. Let's go ahead and read that for me.
Describes the tolerance a person has for following social and organizational rules and procedures. A 5 or above indicates a willingness to go along with the rules and a willingness to conform to various expectations society places on us. A person with a score lower than 5 will sometimes question the expectations that are put on society. This individual will likely choose to do something only if it is believed to be the right thing to do.
Okay, so there are two pieces to this. There are social rules and organizational rules. Now, my guess is from an organizational rule perspective, you're probably a pretty good soldier.
Mm-hmm. I am. I'm a rule follower.
You follow the rules. You're probably
sometimes I wish I would question the rules more. I look at other people who question some of the rules, and I think, wow, well that makes sense. Why haven't I questioned those same rules?
Now, out of curiosity, have you ever studied music?
Yes.
And what kind of music did you study?
Well, in junior high and through high school, I played musical instruments. I played the flute and the oboe and a little bit of piano.
The reason why is there are two types of people who are high musical. There are the folks who want to play rock and roll, but there's a gazillion ways of playing, Stairways to Heaven, right? And then there are those that learn classical music in playing Mozart.
Mm-hmm.
There is only one way to play Mozart.
Mm-hmm.
And people who tend to be highly creative, they fall in one of those two camps. I don't find very many. I've done a few classical musicians, and their creativity comes out very differently.
How so? What do you mean?
They're very rule. They follow the rules.
Yeah, yeah.
To the letter of the law. I had one gentleman who grew up a Mormon. He was a classical. He had a PhD. I don't know if it's something like Gaelic, Irish Gaelic, something.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very different and the fact that you're a very rule oriented creative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm gonna keep on going back to that.
If I were studying music again, I would probably learn Mozart.
Okay.
That would be, yeah, I think I would feel a little uncomfortable going into rock because, not enough, not an, Not enough guardrails there.
Yes. So one of the things, I'm going to throw this idea at you. You probably want to know where the fences are, but you want the freedom to do what's inside the fence.
Well, yes, exactly. So I'll give you, I don't know if this is a good example or not, but it does come to mind. I had to take an art class in college once, and the final project was given to us. And on the last day, or one of the last days of class, the instructor shared everyone's projects. And while I, and he got to my project and he shared it with the class. And by then I knew I was in trouble because I had seen how everyone else's projects turned out. And although I had followed the rules, my art looked way different than everyone else's art.
Okay.
Now, wildly different.
So that make you feel good? Bad?
It made me feel a little bad initially. I was a little surprised. And then I felt really proud of it. I embraced it. I'm like, look at me.
Well, very good.
I like my art project.
Okay. So what about following social rules?
Well, I probably question social rules more than work rules.
Okay.
I'm still a rule follower socially.
Yep.
And I will follow them.
Well, we have right now, we have a lot of controversial social rules going on, whether it's immigration, whether it's gay marriage, whether it's...
Right.
Right?
Right.
Where on the spectrum do you fall? Left, right, middle?
Oh, more on the left.
Okay. Given this is a... We're creating a podcast. We're not going to get into that.
Yeah, I'm not certain. I wouldn't describe myself as a conservative.
Okay.
But I'm certainly not a full-fledged liberal either.
Okay. Well, it's, you know, I'll use the example. One of my very first clients was a one on social responsibility. Now, lesbian, you know, living in Austin, Texas, which is now the gay capital of the Southwest, she didn't do anything by the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Versus I've had other people who very much tend to be very religious and there's a right way and a wrong way to do things. They tend to score very high.
Yeah. Yeah. I am not the latter.
Okay. Okay. So let's go back to the work styles document with the bars.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about how you make decisions.
Okay.
So what I want you to do is the first two bars, public contact and detail. You're a 3 public contact and an 8 detail. So go ahead and read those two little couple of sentences out loud, and then I'm going to do a major translation for you.
Okay. Public contact prefers activities involving social contact, seeks solutions through people, focused on people being central to organizational effectiveness. Detail. Concern for the procedural and detailed aspects of work, focused on processes as central to organizational effectiveness.
Okay, all this really means is you shouldn't be around people all the time.
Right, right? Yeah, I agree.
People who tend to be high in skewed like you probably can work from home some of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. But
don't read anymore. Anything past that.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the next two, global versus linear. You're a 2 global, 9 linear. Go ahead and read those two for me.
Global, problem solving that involves a relational and holistic process. Thinking and actions need not follow a set sequential pattern. Linear. Preference for activities and tasks that follow a logical, sequential analysis and process.
Now, you like following a process.
I do. I like setting processes, too.
Well, give you an idea. I had one woman who, on the side, she was an interior designer. Mm-hmm. And she told me I am not linear. And she was big time linear. And I said, well, tell me, how do you walk into a house? How do you do interior design? You know, this stuff. She says, well, the first thing I do is I'll look at the colors. And the next thing I look at the shapes. And she gave me this detailed process of how she evaluated. Mm-hmm. I said, I am not linear. I said, you just gave me a process. Mm-hmm. So creators can be that way.
Right, right, sure.
Okay, so the next one is conceptual versus concrete. You're a 3 conceptual and an 8 concrete. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and read those two.
Conceptual utilizes abstract information, experience, intuition, and knowledge to find fresh and imaginative solutions. Concrete uses analysis and facts to solve problems.
Give me the facts. Get the hell out of my way.
Right.
Is that resonating?
Mm-hmm. Yes, very much.
Okay. I want you to step over to the other document, and there is a combinations of problem solving, and there is a, I believe, a concrete linear. I think it's the last one on the page.
Right, right.
Go ahead and read that. Let me know if you agree with it.
Individuals scoring high on both concrete and linear are practical and action-oriented. Their credo is, give us the facts and get out of the way. These individuals see the use of logic and hard analysis as valuable and necessary. On the other hand, they are impatient with the planning process and often question its value. They are at their best when the problem to be fixed can be readily analyzed and contain an element of urgency. Objective and pragmatic, these individuals are not drawn to problems just because they are problems. The problems need to have practical results if solved.
Does that resonate with you?
It does. It does. Yes.
So what in there really resonates?
Well, they are at their best when the problem to be fixed can be readily analyzed and contain an element of urgency.
Okay.
Yeah, I need to know that there's something behind the problem solving.
Yes.
Like I need to have purpose.
Right. So one of the things I'm going to have you do is one of the homework assignments I'm going to give you is I want you to look at 3 problems to solve in your personal life. And 3 okay. problems, and I'll write this up for you.
Okay.
And 3 problems you solved in your work life. Mm-hmm. I want you to self-observe. Now, the write-up I just gave you, you can use that as kind of a framework to how to look at it. Mm-hmm. But what I want you to do is write up each of those problems you solved and say, how the heck did I do that? How did I approach it? Mm-hmm. Well, guarantee you is... you will see a pattern. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that pattern is because everyone's mm-hmm. different. Mm-hmm. What I want you to be able to do is explain it.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. So current problems versus...
Could be past problem. Okay. Anything I want you... Because by the way, the more you understand how you think, mm-hmm. the more you will see in other people, wow, they think differently.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's always enlightening.
This is where you're at one end of the spectrum, which is a linear mm-hmm. concrete. I've worked with a lot of product managers who are global conceptual thinkers. Mm-hmm. But they like looking at big problems and they peel them back in a completely nonlinear fashion.
Right.
When they finally come to the conclusion, you ask them, how'd you come to that? And they look at you, isn't it obvious? Mm-hmm. If I take those two people and put them in the same room, mm-hmm. they can be quite complementary. Mm-hmm. They more likely will kill one another mm-hmm. because they think polar opposite. They think in polar opposite ways.
Right, right.
And if you can't understand the fact that, wow, that person thinks very differently because you understand your own process. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does, very much.
By the way, this will help you very likely with a lot of your employees mm-hmm. once you start seeing how you do stuff. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things I want you to be able to do is, if you ever take another job, be able to say, by the way, this is how I think. This mm-hmm. is how I work through problems. Does that work for you? Mm-hmm. If they go ahead and look at you with green eyes and go, wow, you're weird, then... it's not the right place for you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it is very valuable to know how other people think and solve problems and go about their daily work. It's good to be insightful about that.
Yes. Well, again, it's all about your own self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The last thing I want to do is I want you to bring up your Berkman map.
Okay.
And ignore where the stars and the things are in the boxes.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, the blue asterisk, mm-hmm. those are the things when you do them, you get energy. So go ahead and read those out loud for me.
Okay. Your blue asterisk shows that you may like to innovate or create, plan how to do things, consider the future, create new approaches, look at things theoretically.
In other words, be creative.
Mm-hmm.
And plan how to do it.
Right.
Okay.
Got to have a plan.
Yeah. Yes. You have to have a plan. Okay. Your yellow diamond. That's how you just self-described yourself. Go ahead and read that.
Your yellow diamond shows that you are probably careful, focused, low-key, team-minded, and detached.
Does that resonate?
It does.
Okay. So your yellow circle, that's how you want to be treated. Now, we're going to go into this much deeper next time in your stress report.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead and read those.
Your yellow circle shows you are most comfortable when people around you tell you the rules but invite your input, don't interrupt you unnecessarily. You also respond well to people who give you time alone or with one or two others, don't overschedule you, and show they appreciate you.
Does that resonate?
Yes.
Now, the last one is, again, the yellow circle, I like to tell you the rules but invite your input.
Right. Yeah, that's very important.
Right. So your yellow square, these are your primary stress behaviors. Go ahead and read those.
Quietly resistant and impractical. You may also become unsociable and critical, indecisive, protective.
Do those resonate?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the things I want you to do is take this last little section, cut it out, and put it someplace you see it frequently.
Okay.
Maybe next to your computer, maybe on your refrigerator door. Because one of the things I want you to be able to do is start spotting your primary stress behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
You can spot them early. You then can do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And if you know the fact that you get real quiet and start, then something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And that's where I want you to start slowly over time, start spotting the stress behaviors.
Okay.
Right? Because if you can spot them, then you can do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
What we're going to do next time is we're going to go through your Berkman stress report, which will give you your top 30 needs and with it broken up in three sections. And then with each one, there'll be 8 things that you can do to stay out of stress.
Mm-hmm.
Some of which you're already doing.
Mm-hmm.
Some of which you used to do and you stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be one or two out of the whole grouping that you may want to try.
Okay.
Like, for example, on mine, because I'm very low social energy need, it tells me during the holidays is to schedule downtime.
Mm-hmm.
So I've given myself permission not to go to Christmas parties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the forced socialization just wears me out.
Right.
So I now do that. Mm-hmm. One of the other things, but the other piece of the report that I'm going to let you read later will be, here are your primary stress behaviors in each area, and here are the things you could do to possibly get out of stress.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
What I want to do is help you not go into stress.
By
understanding what are the behaviors that are really good for you and make sure, and that just kind of says, oh, yes, I really ought to go do that.
Okay.
So the homework I'm going to send you is three things. Again, I'll send this to you. One, all those usual behavior phrases that you picked out in the first homework, I'm going to have you turn those into Sarah talk.
Okay.
How would you say that? Because what I'm later going to have you do is turn that into a narrative. In other words, my goal here is to get you to the point where someone says, hey, Sarah, tell me about yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
You're coming from things that are based on who you are and not what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The second thing we're going to do is I'm going to have you look at three problems in your personal life and three problems you solve in your work life.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one will be, your homework will be, I have a career reflection worksheet, which says, who was your best boss ever? Why?
Mm-hmm.
When did you have a team you just adored?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
When did you feel the most valued at work? What did they do?
Right.
Right? When did you have the right level of activity? How much was that?
Mm-hmm.
You worked for 25, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a lot of big data. So the last time I took you back to when things kind of sucked.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want you to go back and when were things really good?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
The idea is to start framing things up. The last homework was, I don't want to do that.
Right.
Right? I understand what's going to stress me out. Now I want you to understand what do I want?
Mm-hmm.
What makes me feel valued?
Mm-hmm.
What's the right kind of boss?
Yeah.
Like in your case, you don't really want a boss.
Right. I don't really want a boss.
You want a team. So again, one of the things that comes out of this is you want a very, very orderly team.
Mm-hmm.
You want a team that cooperates, that plays by the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Does that role resonate with you?
Yeah, right? It does.
You want a team that plays well together.
Yeah. I also appreciate though people, like I know the value of, like I like when people take some risks and take a chance.
Yeah.
I know I am not always like that.
Yes.
So if a team member does that, that I like that.
Yes. Well, it's the point there is they're going to take this risk, but they're probably going to do it for the good of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
You know, people can take risks, or the team can be diverse.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that everybody is,
yeah.
Genius.
Doesn't mean that they're going to go rogue.
But,
that I don't like.
Right. But you want people to appreciate that diversity.
Right.
And accept that diversity.
Right, right. And yeah, put it to good use.
Right.
Like do something with it.
Okay. So I will send your homework.
Okay.
And we will go on, and I'm going to stop the recording here.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. I hope you can hear the insights that Sarah is gaining into her work life and how she might apply it. Please pick up a copy of Repurpose Your Career, a practical guide for the second half of life, at Amazon.com or any of the other fine online retailers. When you complete reading the book, I would very much appreciate if you would write an honest review on Amazon.com. The audio version of this book is available on iTunes, Audible, and Amazon. Once again, I'm working on the Career Pivot Community website. I am completing recruiting for the sixth cohort. If you are interested in learning more about the endeavor and would like to be put on a waiting list, please go to careerpivot.com/community. When you sign up, you will receive more information about the community as it evolves. It is those who are in these initial cohorts get to set the direction of this endeavor. This is a paid membership community where I will be offering group coaching, special content, mastermind groups, branding sessions, and more importantly, it will be a community where you can seek help. Please go to careerpivot.com/community to sign up to learn more. Check back next week when we will complete the Can Sarah Repurpose Her Career series. Also, if you have any ideas for a special topic for episode 100, let me know at podcast@careerpivot.com. Thank you for listening all the way to the end of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. You will find all the show notes at careerpivot.com/episode-97. Please hop over to careerpivot.com and subscribe to get updates on this podcast and all the other happenings at Career Pivot. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Podbeam, Overcast, or Spotify. Hope to see you next Monday for another episode of the Repurpose Your Career podcast.